get a little music to play for us. And that'll be, this'll be The Doctor by Loudon Wainwright III. Let me see if I can do this.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, in the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. Better get better, else you're gonna get worse.
Hello. Back to Dr. Logan here, Ken Logan. Let me see if I can do the right thing on this. Okay. All right. Well, I hope you're here to listen to me on The Doctor's Inn for the next hour. So what I do on The Doctor's Inn, the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening, is cover subjects that I think would be a good idea to share with you from the world of medical issues and health issues and advice, etc. I'm not your doctor, but I give you some general information. And you need to know that the voices... the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And I want you to know that the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner with the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit Friends of the Art. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, air conditioning and cooling systems, powder coating, engine repair, along with Cooper, Michelin, and other and all types of AG tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus, complete auto repair, can be reached at 530-342-8338, and at TiresPlusChico.com and on Facebook also. All right. So today's Doctor's Inn is going to be a compilation of three subjects that I'd like to cover a bit with you. One of them, I'm going to dip into the human brain again and a challenge that I find present about that. I'm going to explain that to you. The second thing is respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. You've probably been hearing about that. It's being talked about much more lately, and I'll tell you why that is. And I'd like us all to get on the same page relative to that virus. And then the final thing, if I have time, is going to be talk about a medicine. It's a veterinary medicine that's hit the human market, illicit market, It's a sedative called xylazine, and there are overdoses happening throughout this country relative to that drug. So I think there's some important information to know about that, especially when it comes about what to do if somebody is overdosed on that. And just to know what the heck it is, I think would be good for all of us to get on the same page on that. So, here I am now with a line out of The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel song, you know, The Boxer. When a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. And, wow, interesting thought. When a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest, the human brain, why and how does this happen, you know, that we can hear what we want to hear and believe what we want to believe, no matter what is right in front of us, no matter what the facts tell us. Our brain develops our reality, a reality for us that may or may not be aligned with the facts around us. We believe something so deeply that that belief actually becomes our reality. In a little while, I'm going to talk to you about how that distinctly affects something that I try to do as a physician relative to people's health. So in our life, it's interesting because in our life, our brain often is unable to understand many things, right? There's many things that are a mystery to us. And then so we develop our own answers to some of those mysteries, our own reality. Because of how our imagination works for us, however, or because of how we believe, we listen to the beliefs of other people or other organizations, they can affect what we end up believing or feeling relative to those mysteries. Then that process of us developing our own ways of thinking and believing may rely on the ongoing ideas and opinions from that other person, such as Trump or some other entity that you're believing in, without our own brains developing ideas from facts and accumulating facts and developing our own rational mind. So this is a rational mind fighting with an irrational mind. Another way of saying it is an intelligent mind versus the mind that, quote, traffics in unreality. So simply thinking about these two very different approaches in our brain or our mind, it's amazing to me. But nonetheless, it's true that these two minds or these two mindsets exist in the same person, in the same brain. The same brain person can have the reality or the rational mind working, and then on certain subjects have the unreality or the irrational functioning. I think as human beings, you know, that this brain-function dichotomy gets us into trouble, is a problem. You know, it seems to me that it can be responsible for an enormous amount of deep feelings and deep reactions in some people if you challenge their that area of their brain. And it, of course, can lead to wars in different cultures in the world. So, again, this radio show is The Doctor's In, you know. So the health outcome of this brain dichotomy in a subject that I'm going to talk a little bit about right now in a minute here is vaccinations. You know, the deep-seated irrational concerns or beliefs that some people have prevent them from obtaining vaccinations, and it's unfortunate. So, and I've witnessed that personally with certain patients, and then, of course, certain segments of our population sit in that area of brain function. So, And just so you know, so you, the listeners, I'll tell you this. I, as a physician and as a community member, I am in favor of vaccinations. You probably could pick up on that if you were listening to me. I'm strong. And the reason for that is, here, listen to this. I'm strongly in favor of prevention. Preventative medicine. Prevention. Preventative medicine. Prevention of disease and illnesses as best possible. As best possible from a practical standpoint. And the idea of prevention entails, in this case, the area of infectious diseases. And vaccinations are part of that prevention. I also favor other additional ways or methods of prevention relative to the spread of infectious disease. Other methods as well. All. And that includes people doing what they can relative to helping their immune system, which I'll talk a little bit more in just a second. Avoiding people who may seem like they are ill, and if you are ill, avoiding other people to a degree as best you can. And in the area of infectious diseases, as a doctor, I'm telling you this. The three most important facts or treatments or concerns or ways of dealing with it, let's say that, the three most important ways for we humans to deal with infectious diseases, I don't care what they are, the three most important issues or ways of dealing with infectious diseases are this. The first one is prevention. The second one is, people who know me probably know what the second one is, prevention. And the third one is prevention. We have such a horrible job when people get infectious disease on trying to help them and help the spread from happening. We just all have to be on the same page relative to preventing them. And again, it has to do with helping your immune system, such as, eating wisely. That is, eating regularly, eating appropriately to help your immune system, your body. and also staying adequately active. In other words, don't keep yourself as a, with your face in a computer all the time. Get up and about. Be walking on every day on a regular basis or some kind of activity. Make sure you get enough rest and sleep as possible. Don't forget that. And do your best to decrease stress in your life and in your environment around you as best possible. And be kind to yourself. Respect yourself. Love yourself. Be kind to others around you. And finally, relative to helping with prevention of infectious diseases, vaccinations. Obtain vaccinations as advised by healthcare professionals that you respect. I feel that's all common sense. So this time of year, in the winter, essentially, the respiratory viruses are a problem. And influenza, respiratory syncytial virus, which is RSV, sometimes people use that terminology, RSV. And then COVID is going to increase during the winter. And then bacterial pneumonia. These are just some of the respiratory organisms or pathogens that can cause us problems here this time of the year. So there are vaccinations for influenza. There are vaccinations for COVID, and I believe in both of those. There's a vaccination for bacterial pneumonia prevention in at least in people over the age of 65. RSV. Respiratory syncytial virus, that's a little different story relative to vaccinations, and you're going to hear about that. I want you to know that's a little different story. So I'm going to morph into talking to you about respiratory syncytial virus. First of all, it's a virus, and of course it. As you can tell by the name, it infects and affects the respiratory system. Is it a new virus? why haven't we heard about it before? Well, it's been around. We have heard about it before. We have, but it hasn't hit the public knowledge quite as much as it has recently. And there's a reason for that, that it's hit the public recently, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But it's not a new virus. It's been around for a long time, and I'll tell you exactly how long that it's been identified in just a few minutes. Remember that it is a virus. And it happens to be an RNA, ribonucleic acid stranded molecule type virus. And viruses are different than bacteria. Bacteria are little organisms, the independent organisms, which we can at least get a glimpse of or see a little bit with a regular light microscope in the science lab, you know, at high school or wherever. But viruses are not. Viruses are minute. They're not a independent organism like that. They're a strand of molecule with some features that are a little different, but there are molecule strands of RNA or DNA, which are types of molecules. They do not reproduce themselves. They are reproduced by the host cells. In other words, they infect a host. In RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, the host that we're talking about now, is the human. Well, when RSV enters the human, it literally enters human cells in the respiratory tract. And then those human cells reproduce the virus. And the virus causes problems if the presence of the virus in those cells causes inflammation, and which means irritation and inflammation in the respiratory tract. I'll tell you a little more specifically about that in a minute. But that's the idea. Viruses, as you know, can't easily be grown in a laboratory like bacteria can. And viruses don't have antibiotics like bacteria. We have, for most, not all, but most bacteria, we have antibiotic medication that we can take or give, either by vein or by pill or whatever, to help kill or help your body kill, either help your body kill or kill, actually, the bacteria. Viruses, we don't have that level of medications, at least not yet. We have some antiviral medicines, but relative to comparison to antibiotics and what antibiotics can do to help us with bacterial illnesses. Antivirals are nothing like that. They slow down the virus numbers somewhat. That is decreasing the virus amount over time to a degree, but we have a difficult time helping ourselves with virus infections. why has RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus, hit the media lately? Well, it's because now there's some pharmaceutical companies that have come up with some stuff. That's why. That's why you've heard about it. And the stuff are actually a couple of companies that have come up with a vaccination, and then a couple of companies that have come up with antibody shots, which I'll talk about in a minute. So, you know, my love-hate relationship with that scenario is the love part of the love-hate relationship in my case with pharmaceutical companies and them coming up with this vaccination and this antibody treatment is, yeah, okay, good. I'm glad. That's a love. I'm glad that's good. I'm in favor of that. The hate part is that they have a lot of money and they put a lot into advertising and a lot of word to the public and bam, bam, bam. And what about all the other things that I already mentioned about that are of basic, absolute importance relative to our bodies fighting off infections and preventing infections? All those things I talk about, you know, isolating yourself to a degree when you got a virus infection. Don't come around some people who are infected. Stay home when you're infected. Da, 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 da. Help your immune system. Eat wisely. Rest wisely. Be active. Do healthy stuff. Those things don't get talked about on the air by, you know, they aren't paying millions of dollars to put that. Nobody's paying millions of dollars to put that information on the television or wherever you're reading about the RSV vaccinations and treatments. Anyway, and that includes doctors. Doctors don't speak through their clients, their patients enough about the things we got to be cheering section of cheerleaders for our patients, our people we care for, relative to helping them with their immune systems. And yeah, okay, and a little bit about vaccinations, but don't make the whole visit about vaccinations. God. Anyway, that's my opinion. Now, having said all that, I'm going to go back to the actual virus itself, RSV. Let me give you some background. It was first identified as an illness back in 1956 in chimpanzees. And then one year later, it was recognized as a illness in children. And soon there, and they recognized that initially by the antibodies that the kids were making, which are proteins that the immune system in the children make against the virus. They identified those, but they went on to actually identify the virus itself. Apparently, it was first called human ortho. Pneumovirus. Anyway, there's also one similar in cattle, so we have a lot in common with cattle. Didn't know that, did you? So, one important issue about our respiratory syncytial virus infection is the time of year, and that's the cold time of the year. And I'm not exactly sure why that is in any of these respiratory viruses, but it might have something to do with the fact that we're all kind of huddled together indoors at those times, but it might also have something to do with the life cycle of the virus itself. I'm not sure, but nonetheless, RSV is more commonly a problem in the late fall, winter. Fall and winter, and maybe early spring. And that's something that I'm going to talk about in a minute when it comes to vaccinations, because we time them with respect to that as well. I'll tell you about that. What age groups get affected by RSV? The answer is all of us. Babies, newborn babies, through elderly, and everybody in between. It's a nastier illness in newborns and elderly. We do better in all the rest of us in betweeners age wise, but the problem is that in newborns, early newborns, it can cause hospitalizations, respiratory problems, to the degree that it's one of the main reasons for hospitalizations of newborns, and some of them die. As a matter of fact, when you compare the deaths in newborns from influenza virus and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, respiratory syncytial virus is 5 times more likely to lead to the death of the newborn compared to influenza. So respiratory syncytial virus can be nasty in newborns. And then the elderly, yes, and there are many more elderly killed by complications of respiratory syncytial virus than there are newborns. It's distinctly one of the viruses that can lead to complications that can lead to deaths in the elderly. And all people involved with infections, newborns, elderly, and others, other medical conditions that occur or are present in the person that gets this RSV infection play a role in how severe the infection will be and the likelihood for needing hospitalization or, in some cases, death, unfortunately. Symptoms. The symptoms of RSV are similar to the other respiratory viruses like influenza and even similar to the cold viruses like rhinovirus. And similar to COVID, actually. So they include symptoms in the upper respiratory tract. That's where this infection is. So that means runny nose, nasal congestion, some sore throat, some irritation of the eyes, usually both eyes, conjunctivitis, you know, red eyes, and then cough and fatigue, low-grade fever. So, again, runny nose, nasal congestion, sore throat, sometimes irritated eyes, cough. And you could say the same thing for the other respiratory viruses, actually, except the cough in this case. In respiratory syncytial virus, often the cough is somewhat of a bigger deal in that sometimes in babies and adults even, there can be some wheezing, airway narrowing, wheezing, that's a little more likely. And actually, I read that babies that are bothered with RSV as a baby are at increased risk for developing asthma as they age. I thought that was unfortunate. what do we do about RSV? Well, again, prevention is what we do. And that's what we have to do, is prevention. It's of great importance. And that's one thing that, by the way, COVID virus over these last 3 years has taught us, some ways of prevention, such as the isolation thing, you know, where if you're ill, stay away from other people. And if you see somebody who's ill, coughing and sneezing or runny nose, well, back away from them. Don't get close with them. That's prevention 101, you know. That's common sense, as best you can. And especially stay away from the elderly. And especially stay away from newborns if you have a respiratory infection. And by the way, testing for RSV, because this isn't a virus that has had a lot of work done with it yet, we don't have as readily the tests for RSV like there is for influenza and, of course, COVID. So it's a little trickier to know if somebody has RSV, by the way, unfortunately. So again, the prevention is doing things to help your immune system. I'm going to get to vaccinations in a minute, but get adequate rest, eat regularly and wisely, be appropriately active physically in your life, avoid stresses in your life as best possible, and finally, listen to the latest advice relative to getting vaccinations. Currently, that's influenza vaccinations for everybody over the age of 6 months. It's advised now, right now, to have to get an influenza vaccination every winter, every fall, actually. And be up to date with your COVID vaccinations. That's advised. As far as vaccinations with RSV, again, like I was saying a minute ago, it's in a different stage here. This is a new thingy, the vaccination issue or ability to vaccinate against RSV is actually new. So it's different advice, and here it is. The deal about the vaccination existence, even, relative to RSV, it just was licensed and recommended by the CDC as of May 2023, so like 6 months ago. And there's two companies, GlaxoSmithKline and Pfizer, each have, and apparently they're similar vaccinations. I'll tell you more about it slightly in a minute, but here, at this point in time, to my knowledge, RSV vaccinations are advised for two general categories of adults. It is not yet available for children. So the RSV vaccination, no matter what you know, and it's tricky what you read on the internet, by the way. There is not, as of this day, today, as far as I know, an RSV vaccination for your child. We go about it. You go about it differently. There is a vaccination advice for two areas of adults. One of them is the pregnant woman, and I'll tell you more details about that. And think about it. I told you the newer newborns are the ones that are bothered by the worst by RSV. So you vaccinate the pregnant woman before she has the child, so that when the baby is born, the baby carries the immunity with her, with the child, has the antibodies. So I'll tell you about the details of that in just a second. The other category of adults that are advised to get RSV vaccinations currently are all adults over the age of 60, so the elderly. So the RSV vaccinations are tailored to help those two pieces of the population that are bothered the worst: newborns, the early newborns, and the elderly. So I'm going to say the elderly thing one more time. The elderly, 60 years and older, this time of year, not all time of year, but this time of year. So, you know, the late fall, winter, early springtime, one shot is advised for everybody 60 years and older. I don't know what it's going to be like next year, what the advice is going to be next year. Of the two vaccinations, RSV vaccinations, two companies that make RSV vaccinations, that adult vaccination could be either the GlaxoSmithKline or the Pfizer. It doesn't matter. The other group of adults that RSV is advised, again, is the pregnant woman, with the goal being to get the newborn to have immunity. And that is just with the Pfizer. Apparently, the GlaxoSmithKline doesn't have that licensure for pregnant women yet. So it's the Pfizer one for pregnant women. All pregnant women are specifically advised to be vaccinated, one shot, and it's between the time of 32 to 36 weeks of gestation. And remember, for all of you, for those of you who don't know, a gestation means how long are they pregnant, is 40 weeks generally. Babies are born about 40 weeks, which is 9 months. So 40 weeks into the pregnancy, somewhere 36 to 40 weeks. So the vaccination for all pregnant women is advised to be at 32 to 36 weeks of gestation. So about 1 to 2 months before they are to deliver the baby. And the idea there is to give them enough time, approximately a month, to adequately make antibodies from the vaccination, so that their mother has in her bloodstream antibodies to the RSV, and therefore then, and that antibody does cross the placenta into the baby. And so the baby carries the antibodies for against RSV as well. So that newborn is born already able to fight off RSV if mom gets her vaccination at 32 to 36 weeks of pregnancy. During this time of year, if they're pregnant during the summer or late spring or some other time, it's not advised for them to get it, because that newborn won't need that vaccination if they're born in the summer, because RSV isn't a problem then. All right, so those are the two categories of adults that are advised to get RSV currently, vaccination. Then there are two monoclonal antibodies, so antibody proteins that are available for babies, newborns that need them, such as if the mother was not able to get vaccinated for RSV and the baby's the parents want that for their baby, there is a intramuscular or IM shot of antibody that the baby can have. There's two of them available. One of them is a one-time shot. The other one is a monthly shot. The parents would talk with the pediatrician about that. And then for older babies, 8 to 12 months, if they have other medical conditions, then maybe they, the parents will want that child, that baby, to get the antibody, RSV antibodies, if they have medical conditions that are, that RSV would really aggravate or make worse. Anyway, so talking with the pediatrician about that would be the thing to do. Interesting, this RSV thing. All right. Now, gosh. I have time to do some more talking about other things, such as xylazine. So, xylazine, and that's this is the drug that's a veterinarian. It's used on animals. It's a veterinarian drug, IV, usually, or IM, so shot type, for animals to sedate them. And xylazine is spelled X-Y-L-A-Z-I-N-E, xylazine. Maybe you've heard about it in the news. I don't know. The reason it's been in the news is because, not because of animals, but because of humans getting a hold of it and then dying. So overdose deaths. So again, it's not a new medicine or anything, but how or why it's gotten into the street drug world, I do not know, but it's unfortunate. It is not a medicine that is licensed for humans. It sedates the animal and can put them out, knock them out. It's a synthetic medicine. It's medication. It's made in the laboratory by pharmaceutical industry, and comes in. Here's one of the problems with it when it hits the street, though, is it's comes in three different strengths of liquid, and they're not like just a little bit different strengths. They're massively different strengths: 20 milligrams per milliliter, 100 milligrams per milliliter, and 300 milligrams per milliliter. In other words, from 20 to 300 milligrams per milliliter. So dramatically different strengths, the solution. It'll look the same, but they're dramatically different potencies. So hence, on the street, the potencies are going to be variable, and I suspect unreliable. So yeah, 15 times different strengths, you know, that's big. And then the other thing that apparently is happening illicitly is, people are drying the liquid, I guess, and making it into a powder and some pressing it into a pill form. That's a lot of work to do that, I bet, but apparently it's being done. So it can be, people can be taking it as pill and or powder. I don't know if they're snorting it or as a powder, or, you know, up their nose or what, but it's now, so here's the deal. It sedates the person, and when it sedates the person, especially if it's a strong, you know, if it's very concentrated source, and it's, if they get a strong dose, the thing that happens in sedated people is the first thing that happens is they quit breathing. And animals, the vets have to watch for that with animals too. And, you know, that's why when they put people out or put animals out, sometimes they put a tube into their lungs and breathe for them, you know. Well, nobody's got that going on the street. So if you stop breathing on the street, you'll die. You'll overdose. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. how long will it last? Once that xylazine is in the body of the human, how long is that sedating going to happen? And the answer to that is, who knows? If it's a pill form, it's going to it's going to last longer, or powder form and then snorted, it'll be less long but longish. And then if you put it in the vein, it's going to be shorter, but it's going to be whopping, and intramuscularly it'll be kind of in between. So it's just a wild ride and dangerous. And apparently people who are obtaining illicit xylazine are getting it because they specifically are looking for it. But sometimes they're getting it in their bodies not because they wanted to. In other words, it's snuck into other sources of drugs that they're using on the street. So some of the people that are suffering from xylazine don't know they have xylazine. I know in the world of fentanyl, which is an opiate, xylazine is not an opiate. So medicine like Narcan will do nothing to it. Xylazine can stop people from breathing, but Narcan will not stop the xylazine, will not help that person. But because xylazine sometimes is taken at the same time somebody's taking fentanyl or heroin, it's still a good idea to use Narcan, because how in the world you come across somebody who's overdosed, you don't know what they've taken. So Narcan cannot hurt somebody. If somebody has used xylazine only and I've stopped breathing and are out, you give them Narcan, you're not going to hurt them. You can't hurt them with Narcan. You need to breathe for them. You need to give them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and call 911. So I wanted, and do we have test strips for it? There is a test strip for it now available, similar to how there are fentanyl test strips available for the public to have. But in the reading I've done, there's still questions about the accuracy. In other words, how sensitive is it and how specific is it? But at least there's steps in the right direction relative to being able to test dope, the drug someone's going to illicitly take. There are at least are some steps in the right direction of having test strips available to inform people of what they've got a hold of. Wow. And by the way, when xylazine and fentanyl, if they were utilized by the person at the same time, the sedation and the stopping of the breathing from the xylazine and the fentanyl will add to each other, you know? They'll get double stop breathingness. It's horrible. But again, if you see somebody that you feel is, you know, if you come across somebody who's who is unconscious and turning purple, that means they're dying in front of you. Again, the first thing that stops with xylazine and with fentanyl is the breathing. The heart may still be beating, but the point is that if their lips are turning purple and they're getting blue looking, somebody needs to breathe for them. You need to do mouth to mouth resuscitation. Then somebody needs to feel for a pulse too. It's possible that their heart is still beating, and then you'll just have to breathe for them. But if their heart's not beating, then you have to do chest compressions as well, and somebody needs to call 911. It's a good idea to roll the person a little bit to the side, so if they vomited, make sure that gets cleared out of their mouth so they don't breathe that in. Yeah. Wow. So that's the words on xylazine. Ew. Well, now let me chat a little bit about some medical news blurbs that have I have seen. I get on email American Medical Association medical updates, and I'm not a member of the American Medical Association, but I do receive these little pieces of information, news, and they get this news from different variety of sources, journals, other things, and they do little tidbits of it informationally to some of us doctors, and I think it's a good thing that what they're doing on that. The two of them recently this month, the American Medical Association medical alerts or medical updates talked about studies recently about children and unintentional deaths and relative to firearms, you know, guns. And, you know, it's sad. Over the last two decades, there have been 1,262 children that have died from unintentional gunshot wounds. Unintentional, so, you know, not a murder. Wow. And the that's what this says anyway. And so the point they were making on this little blurb is that these according to the researchers, the firearms used with those unintentional or accidents were often stored loaded. The guns were loaded 74% of those cases, and unlocked in 76% of those cases, and were most commonly accessed via nightstands, you know, in other sleeping areas. That's where the kids got them from. I mean, not the kids' sleeping area, but the parents' sleeping area. Yeah. Wow. And Owen, catch this. And then the MMWR says unintentional firearm injuries to children are inflicted by others 53% of the time. Wow. Guns. And I'm sure that the bulk of those are going to be handguns. It didn't mention that, but another one interesting point here, medical news, is people who have had a COVID infection are at risk for atrial fibrillation, acquiring atrial fibrillation a month after or so after they have had that COVID infection. And they don't tell that as this being necessarily in people who are suffering from what is called long COVID, in other words, other symptoms of long of post COVID, like tiredness, that fatigue that won't go away. So atrial fibrillation is irregular heartbeats, and it only becomes a problem when that irregular heartbeat is making the main part of the heart, the ventricles, pump too fast, and then people can get short of breath and lightheaded, could even pass out, and occasionally, small number of people actually can have a stroke to their brain because of a blood clot that happens in a heart with atrial fibrillation. So the point is, it's something to pay attention to in COVID. If you've had COVID, to watch for, don't worry. I'm not trying to freak people out here, but watch for irregular heartbeats on into your future, especially in that month following your COVID infection. COVID is still around and infecting, by the way. Duh. Another American Medical Association medical little blurb of information. This came from a publication called Health Day. Letting women schedule their own mammograms increases the likelihood that they will actually follow through and do the mammogram. And I paraphrased that. So here's what it says. Allowing women to schedule their own mammography appointments increases the likelihood they'll follow through on the screening study. In other words, having the mammogram done. It doubled. It went to about 50% of them would do it then, when it was only down to 22% if somebody else scheduled it for them. Gosh, that's low. Mammogram screening, screening for breast cancer in women, good idea. Starting in the generally around age 50, but talk to your doctor about potentially getting starting younger. And different, and a different advice if you have breast cancer in your family, by the way. Here's another one, interesting one. I don't know if you guys have heard of fatty liver. They call it steatotic liver. So fatty livers are fairly common nowadays. In other words, the liver gets a little enlarged, and it's the liver enzymes, blood tests can be a little elevated, and happens with a lot of times with type 2 diabetes, but other people as well. But here's the point, they said. Anybody with any kind of liver disease, including the fatty liver, should restrict their alcohol to 7.4 grams a day. And my opinion is they should any inflammation of the liver, chronic hepatitis or liver irritation of any kind, liver, generally, most of us say, don't drink alcohol. It increases the likelihood for further inflammation. So that's the point. Here's another one, a little blurb that I got from a different source, writers, about one of the weekly shots, you know, Ozempic. And well, this one is called Lilly's, is called Zepbound. Anyway, these are the as far as I know, these are the they call them GLP-1 inhibitors, but they're, or agonists, but they're a weekly shot that people with diabetes use, but type 2 diabetes, but some people are using them for weight loss. Well, here's, and this is kind of like a weight loss from Lilly's Zepbound reversed. So the weight loss stopped and it went the other way. They gained weight after stopping the treatments, the shots, the weekly shots. And when I heard that, when I read that, I thought, what I said to myself was, duh, that's not the approach that I would favor, getting a shot to help one lose weight. I would advise other methods. Here's another one. 20 minutes of vigorous physical activity a week helps lower the risk of cardiac arrest. This was a European study. Okay. The point there is, we all say it, the point there is, regular activity, regular exercise of some sort, body activity, is healthy for your cardio, your heart and your arteries, your cardiovascular system. Help prevents a variety of medical problems. So regular walking. Now that said, vigorous physical activity for 20 minutes a week to help you not have have your heart stop. That's kind of an unusual statement, but the real thing you're trying to prevent in most people is a heart attack or a stroke. And other cardiovascular problems. So regular activity is beneficial, preventative medicine-wise. And then the final thing that I'm not really going to talk about much is the problems with Medicare Advantage. So if you're 65 and older and you're looking, if the pharmaceutical industry, the drug industry, and insurance industry is trying to get you to obtain a Medicare Advantage plan, so Part C, some people call it, I think, beware. That's my advice, beware. And I'll probably talk more about that in the future because that's they're getting into some problems. That's all I've heard. I mean, I don't know the specifics yet. So, hey, let me tell you that everything you heard me say today on the Doctor's Inn were my opinions. They're not the opinions of anybody else. Not the opinions of KZFR, it's KZFR staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They were my opinions. And I want you to know that the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions from you, the KZFR supporters, and by D.A. Lampe. So the letter D, the letter A, and then Lampe, L-A-M-P-E. Construction, D.A. Lampe, Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and community radio in Northern California. For more information, visit D.A. Lampe, L-A-M-P-E, construction.com. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 5:30 p.m. And at they are at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico, serving Chico and the North State since 1975. You're listening to KZFR Radio. This is Ken Logan, Dr. Logan, Family Practice, the third Thursday of each month, 6 to 7 in the evening. I do the Doctor's Inn. If you have some subject you want me to cover, you could email me, klogan.md@yahoo.com. Now, the next program is going to be Planetary Radio in just a couple minutes. I'm going to see if I can play Dear Doctor by the Stones, Rolling Stones, that is. Hang on a sec. See if I can get rolling on that.
Dear Doctor, take one, right.
Oh, help me, please, Doctor, I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's beating. Can't you please take it out and preserve it right there in that jar? Oh, help me, please, Mama, I'm sickening. It's today, that's the day I'm to plunge. Oh, the gal I'm to marry is a bow-legged sow. I've been soaking up drink like a sponge. Don't you worry, get dressed, cry my mother. As you fly me with bourbon so sour, pour your socks up, put your suit on, comb your long hair down, for you will be wet in the hour.
Dragonfly soars to final design phase this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. NASA's Dragonfly mission to Saturn's moon Titan has been authorized to proceed with work on final mission design and fabrication, known as Phase C. Today we get an update on the mission's progress and a new timeline from some of the amazing people at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab. We'll hear from Bobby Braun, who's the head of the APL